It was 4 years ago today when the state of Michigan made it known there would be consequences for what happened in Flint. State Attorney General Bill Schuette, at that time, announced a criminal investigation against more than a dozen people involved in water and in the cover-up of Flint's water crisis. Here he is later that spring.
They failed in their responsibilities to protect the health and safety of families of Flint. They failed Michigan families. Indeed, they failed us all, and I don't care where you live.
Last summer, under a new state AG, all those charges were dropped. And today, Flint residents like Claire McClinton are asking what happened.
Here we sit, 4 years from the initial announcement of charges. We are just sitting up here with no one being held accountable, on top of the fact that we have received no, zero, nada compensation for the damages that were done to our health and our homes.
The city of Flint's disastrous attempt to create a new regional water system has touched countless people's lives and health, including developing children who may never know life at full physical and mental capacity. And the conversation about public health and the position of cities in American life that captured the nation's attention feels oddly unresolved. With us to look back and hopefully forward are Ron Fonger, a reporter for the Flint Journal and MLive who covered the water crisis, and journalist Anna Clark, author of The Poison City, Flint's Water, and the American Urban Tragedy. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you so much. It's really great to be here.
Thank you.
I want to ask you both, you were there in a city where folks were experiencing very immediate health problems, and the city was in a complete tumult in terms of its administration. If someone had asked you 4 years ago where we would be today, what would you have said?
I remember being there at the time that the Attorney General came forward and announced that he was launching his investigation into what happened with the water in Flint. And I don't think anyone thought that 4 years later we still wouldn't have had any criminal cases, you know, get beyond the district court level or with plea deals. If this was a standard police investigation, I think we're inching into the territory where it's becoming a cold case almost.
Anna, what is there anything we can say that Flint has done for national attention to water quality?
Well, it has certainly elevated it to a completely new place, and I think it's been in a very long time, since maybe when we were designing drinking water systems in the first place. There's a lot of unresolved questions about what Flint's legacy is going to be, but I think one positive thing that we can truly say is that there are communities all over the country that are reckoning with their water quality in a new way. I think have been looking towards people in Flint as a kind of blueprint for how to have agency, you know, when it comes to decisions about their water quality, how their water is delivered, equity and environmental justice, access to affordable, healthy drinking water, and infrastructure. I mean, there are cities that are replacing lead pipes. This was not on their radar before Flint. So that is a positive legacy, though, of course, you know, the critical piece of accountability, I think that is something that is just still on the table.
While the criminal case has been stalled since state prosecutors dropped those charges last summer, there were some things that the city enacted. First of all, Ron, can you tell us a little bit about what the litigation has cost taxpayers over the past 4 years?
Just the criminal cases, tens of millions of dollars.
Right.
And there were 15 people who were originally charged with crimes related to the water crisis. They were all former state or city employees or emergency managers who worked in Flint. And they were all provided attorneys to defend them in the lead up to their cases and as they went through the court system or were resolved with plea agreements. Even some people who were never charged with crimes, the former head of the Department of Environmental Quality, for instance, his attorney's bills that state taxpayers paid for amounted to hundreds of thousands of dollars, even though he was never charged with a crime.
Right. We continue to talk about Flint as a public health crisis, but I've sort of come to think of it as a crisis of public administration. Anna, you wrote in The Poison City about a civil engineer named Mark Edwards who played a role in investigating Flint. And you relayed a question that he had about what are we loyal to in this world? Are we loyal to our friends and our employers or to a truth to humankind? And that every scientist and engineer has to decide not once, but throughout their careers, how they're going to answer that question. How do you describe the fundamental tension that kept the people who knew about the problems from either speaking out or from being heard sooner?
I think that's one of the things that's really unnerving about what happened in Flint and part of why it caught so much attention. I mean, because, you know, I mean, this isn't a case where, you know, you have some anonymous corporate company like blinded by profits and poisoning water. You know, I mean, the folks with the power to make decisions that caused and prolonged this crisis are generally, you know, folks who went into the public sector. They're working at the Department of the, you know, the environmental agency or health agency that theoretically they got in there because they want to make the world a better place. They want to help people. So, like, how do we get to a point where you have this sort of cascading series of poor decisions that resulted in actual harm to actual lives? And I think, you know, one of the haunting pieces that the unresolved accountability issue is like sending is that in a bureaucracy, it seems like when something is like everybody's fault, it's nobody's fault. That's the message that's being delivered. And I think that should be a cause for alarm, not just for the folks in Flint, but for all of us.
Ron, what did you learn about what it takes for people to speak out in a situation like this?
These folks, by and large, that have been charged with crimes related to the water crisis, you know, these are crimes of inaction, I guess. They failed to act when they were in a position to stop this long before it was stopped. So unlike a lot of other criminal investigations in that, you know, you're looking for a motive, and in a lot of these cases, what we had was people who were not concerned enough about the public health of the people of Flint that they stood up and this is messed up. Our use of the Flint River and trying to treat that water and get it into homes and deliver a safe product is not working. And there were numerous people who knew that or had very strong suspicions of that, and whether it was spread of bacteria, whether it was the elevated levels of lead that were coming through the tap. I think that's probably what's made pressing these charges a little more difficult than the standard case.
As we mentioned, the prosecutions that were announced 4 years ago have completely fallen through. Do you, either of you, foresee a continued effort to try to bring some justice for the residents of Flint? Ron, have you heard anything?
We're hearing very little out of the Attorney General's office right now. That is by design. They don't want to talk about their investigation other than that they are pursuing it. Only they know for sure what the future of any criminal charges related to this are. But they are at least on charges of misconduct. They are running up against a clicking time clock here because the statute of limitations for misconduct by a public official is only 6 years in Michigan. And April 25th will be 6 years since the switch of Flint's water source.
Ron Fonger is a reporter for the Flint Journal and MLive. We've also been hearing from journalist Anna Clark. She's the author of The Poison City, Flint's Water, and the American Urban Tragedy.